All right. Tonight we're going to be talking about the differences between men and women, part two, son of differences between men and women. First, I want to review the first two points we made last week, just mention them, and then tie them into what we're going to talk about tonight. The first difference that we mentioned last week was the difference in thinking styles. Men tend to be analytic, women tend to be intuitive. And whenever I say this, I always want to qualify and say that this does not mean that men are incapable of intuition or that women are incapable of logic. That's not my point at all. I'm talking about your general perception of the world. Men tend to be analytical in their approach to life, and women tend to be intuitive in their approach to life. And those two characteristics are very complementary when things are functioning the way they ought to function. They both have something to contribute to the other person. So men tend to be analytic, women tend to be intuitive. Obviously, both of these things can be taken to an extreme. Men can go off into the Mr. Spock stuff, logic. And women can intuit something to pieces where there's no rhyme or reason in what they're doing. A legitimate intuition is, I think, a gift of God. A legitimate sense of what's going on is a gift from God. But it can be taken to an extreme in the same way that analysis and logic can be taken to an extreme. You can take it to such an extreme that you leave out the human element. You're no longer dealing with human beings, you're dealing with computers or automatons. That was the first point. Men and women tend to think differently. They tend to think differently. The second difference we covered was the view of the relationship. Men tend to view the relationship differently than the woman does. The woman reviews the relationship as central, and the man tends to view the relationship as a part of the larger picture. The illustration that I used was that of the novel by men for men and the novel by a woman for women. The romantic novel for women, the relationship is the plot. The resolution of the relationship is the climax of the novel. Everything is centered on the relationship. In a novel for men, the girl enters it from the side, if you will, and the book is about cattle rustling or water rights or this or that, you know, the other thing. And the woman comes in and compliments the man and helps him do what he's doing. But the central thing in his mind is not the relationship. Now, that does not mean that the relationship is not a high priority for a Christian man. It is indeed not only a high priority, but it's the highest priority for him. But it's possible for him to have the relationship be the highest priority and still think about it differently than the woman does. If it's number one priority for her and number one priority for him, it's still going to be a different kind of a priority. It's a priority for him because of what it is. It enables him to do what he was designed by God to do in the world. It's a high priority for her because she is ministering to him. They still have different views of the relationship. Now, those were the two points that I covered, not last week, but last time. Before I go on into the differences I'm going to talk about tonight, I wanted to make a very important point. And that is, there are certain differences between men and women which are God-given. They're just built into the system. If you're going to live around someone of the opposite sex, you better get used to it, because this is the way God made them, right? That is true. But it is also true that sometimes you're not able to understand the other person, not because they're a man or not because they're a woman, but because they're in sin. All right? You can take it too far. You can get into sin and be acting in an utterly irrational fashion. And if you're trying to figure out, well, is he doing this because he's a man? No, he's doing this because he's not walking in the light. That's why he's doing this. Now, a masculine sin will take a different form than a feminine sin, right? Frequently, they're going to have the flavoring of the differences that are God-given. But don't chalk everything up to, well, this is the way God made us. If you're dealing with resentments, or if you're dealing with bitternesses, or if you're dealing with on the woman's side, or if you're dealing with harshness, or a condemning spirit or a critical spirit of the man to the woman, if you're dealing with things like that, those things are sin. They are not God-given masculine or feminine traits. Those things are to be eliminated entirely. And you should understand them as such, both in yourself and in the other person. Okay? Now, tonight we're going to talk about sexuality. Now, I'm using the term sexuality, which is a broad term, because we are going to be more specific later on when we split up the men with the men and Nance will take the ladies. I'm going to be talking in broad terms about man and woman, male and female, as sexual creatures, and I'm going to try and lay down some first principles about how men think about sex and how women think about sex that will, I think, help when we get to the more specific practical discussion that we'll have either next week or the time after. All right. God made us male and female, and those differences are not just biological. They are not just biological differences. They are emotional differences. They are spiritual differences. They are differences that go right down to the very core of our being. We've already talked about some of the differences. But here we see a vast chasm between the man's understanding of sexuality and the woman's understanding of sexuality. And I think men and women are going to have to start understanding how the other person's operating if there are not to be major collisions and bumps and misunderstandings and resentments and whatnot. Okay, the first thing that we can say is that as sexual beings, women are much more sexual than men, and most people would probably have said the reverse. Okay, most people, if asked who thinks about sex all the time, would say, well, men as opposed to women. But that betrays the fact that we are talking about sexuality in masculine terms. Sexuality reduces to sex for men, okay? But for women, sexuality does not reduce to sex at all. Let me illustrate the difference. For a man, a sexual act is the sexual act, intercourse. For a woman, the sexual act is from conception to when the kid graduates from college, right? And even then, some. A woman is much more sexual in her entire being. Sexuality includes intercourse, well, courtship, commitment, marriage, intercourse, conception, childbearing, childrearing, mothering, fathering, the whole nine yards. That is all sexual. The family is a sexual institution. Right? The family is a sexual institution. And it's not just because you have boys and girls growing up in it. That's not what makes it a sexual institution. What makes it a sexual institution is that this whole organization is only possible because God has made us male and female. This is why things are the way they are. Men can periodically invent some new way of doing things. They can come up with a partnership or a limited corporation, or they can come up with all these things, but they could not have come up with the family. The family is a God-ordained, God-given institution, and it is a sexual institution. Now, women tend to have a much more accurate view of what sex is all about than men do. All right, their conception, the feminine conception of sex, is the big picture. The male conception of sex is not the big picture at all. Civilization depends upon men submitting their sexual cycle, which is very short, to the woman's sexual cycle, which is very, very long. The woman's sexual cycle is a lifetime thing. The man's sexual cycle is not. All right. Now, men must submit to their wives in this respect if there is to be any kind of stability at all. It is only if the man submits in this way that the family becomes possible. It is possible for a man to remove himself from the picture and you no longer have a family. You still have, no longer have a family the way God designed. What you have is, well, let me back up. If the man removes himself, if he just insists on his own way, his own perception of it, what you're going to have is a lot of rogue males who are not responsible to anyone or anything. There's nothing tying them down, and they are going to become ultimately destructive in that society. Not only is that so, but the constructive input that they could have had with their children is also going to be missing. Now, if the man does not submit to the woman in this respect, if he does not submit to God's sexual institution, the family, then the society that has this going on in it is headed for big trouble. Right? Now, why would people have said, well, men are much more sexual, when you think about it, it is quite obviously the reverse. Women are sexual in just about everything they do is sexually related in the big picture. A man can do many non-sexual things, and sex for him is an isolated act. For the woman, nothing is isolated. Now, what's going on here? Why would we have said that the man is more sexual when he patently isn't? Well, we would have said that because the male sexuality is on the surface. This brings us to the next point. For men, the sexual relationship is first a physical thing. Right? That is the thing that screams at him initially. For a woman, the first and foremost thing in a sexual relationship is security and emotional protection. That's the first priority for her, and it is not with him. Now, I'm speaking of male and female. It goes without saying that a male who is sanctified by the Holy Spirit and who is walking with the Lord is going to be dealing with all this stuff in a godly way. He's not going to be this way. I'm just characterizing the male temptation and the feminine temptation, the female temptation. Once the Holy Spirit gets in the act and the person is a Christian, then they're going to deal with these things and they're going to deal with them biblically. But what happens is we don't even understand the other person's temptations. We think the other person is tempted just like we are. Okay? Now, I'll give you a couple of illustrations of this. For example, with an engaged couple, if a man is trying to be godly and stay out of sexual sin, he is trying to avoid any kind of prolonged hugs. All right? He's saying, okay, I'm going to be godly, I'm going to protect myself, because a man can get into sexual trouble in approximately 15 seconds, right? Give or take 15 seconds. Right? Now, when you have, and the woman doesn't operate that way. That is not how women operate. She is operating on the basis of an emotional relationship, her security. Why won't he hug me? You know, why won't he reassure me? Why won't he touch me? Am I ugly or something? You know, you see how they're operating on two different levels? He's operating on the surface, and he's dealing with sexual temptation. She's operating at a deeper level. She's thinking in terms of emotional attachment, commitment, security, the whole nine yards. Okay? That is an illustration of how it works with an engaged couple. With a married couple, if they don't understand one another, if they don't understand how the other person operates, they're going to misunderstand the other person's temptations utterly. Let me give you an illustration of it. Suppose you have a bad marriage. They've been arguing with each other for 5 years, okay? And finally they have a big rip-roaring argument, and he storms off to work and she stays at home, and they're both fuming. Now, suppose in this situation, some beautiful young secretary at work, some hussy, propositions him, and he's never laid eyes on her in his life. Okay, he doesn't know who she is, where she came from, but she propositions him. Whether or not he succumbs, whether or not he succumbs, and he's prone to, because he's not protected at home, things aren't good at home, he will be tempted if she is attractive. Okay, if she is attractive, he will be tempted. He may fall, he may not, but if she's attractive, he will be tempted. Now, you say, what? Now, meanwhile, she's back, if he told her that he was tempted, she'd say, that scoundrel, that I can't believe. You know, just walking away from this long-term relationship, and he's tempted at this woman he's never laid eyes on in his life. I can't imagine. Now, meantime, if the same thing happened to her, if some Fuller Brush salesman knocked on the door and said, hi, and let's say he's attractive, what do you say, you and I go to bed? She would slam the door in his face no matter how bad the relationship was. Okay? It is only in pornographic myths that it's otherwise. Women don't operate that way. Now, Doug, are you saying that women can't be seduced? Now, I'm saying women can be seduced, but not that way, because their temptations are different. Okay? His are primarily physical and on the surface. Hers are emotional. Now, for example, he is seduced physically and then emotionally. She is seduced first emotionally and then physically. Next door neighbor takes time to chat with her over the back fence and, you know, gets the lawnmower started for her, and he's friendly and he's considerate, unlike the turkey that just, you know, and he pays attention to me. He seems to really care about me. He's not just distant. He doesn't take me for granted. And what happens is that all the emotional needs that her husband should be meeting and is not, this other man steps in and begins to meet. And she is seduced emotionally first and then physically, and the man, it's the other way around. And both of them are going to have trouble understanding the other one. Okay? How could you? Now, and that could be a charge leveled by both against the other. Now, I'm not saying that any of this to justify either sin, because at the judgment, God would say to both of them, how could you? Right? But the question that God asks, how could you, is entirely different from the question that the husband and wife ask one another. The husband and wife ask this of one another because they are ignorant. You know, what's going on? I don't understand what's going on. God understands very well what's going on and sees that given your resources, you didn't resist your temptation. You, given your resources, didn't resist yours. All right? Now, back up another moment. Given this is the case, how do you bring up children? I'm gonna make a statement about children, not because I want to get into how to bring up children, but to illustrate this principle so that we can understand ourselves, given this example. If I want to protect my children from sexual immorality when they grow up, I'm going to have to impart certain common things to all of them, boy or girl. But at some point, I'm going to have to begin to differentiate. Okay? With my son, I'm going to have to teach and instill principally self-control, physical self-control. Right? And it's the same kind of self-control that you exercise when you're trying not to eat chocolate chip cookies. It's a physical appetite. It's a physical thing. And you have to instill physical strength